Jaya Vishnu Parampara Mahamsa Parivrajika Charya Sarvatara Sattva Shri Srimad Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindu Ki Jai Iskam Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Jai Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasa Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gokopinath Shama Kundara Rakunda Giri Dobradana Ki Jai Sri Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Shtamit Dham Ki Jai Sri Shumayapur Dham Ki Jai Sri Sri Raghunath Puri Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Shri Shri Jamuna Maya Ki Jai, Shri Shri Krishna Balarama Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gauritaya Ki Jai, Shri Shri Govardhana Dare Ki Jai, Shri Shri Giriraja Swami Ki Jai, Shri Shri New Govardhana Dama Ki Jai, Shri Shri Bhakti Vedanta Goswami, Shri Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Namacharya Shri Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Rayam nam namaskritam naram chayvam narotamam yasam tato jayam ujiraye nasta praheshu apadeshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati tamashlokir bhakti bhavati naistiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fourth chapter, 10th verse.
Samrat kasya vehito
Samrat kasya vehito
Samrat kasya vehito
Samrat kasya vehito
Pandunam manavardhanaha
Pandunam manavardhanaha
Pandunam manavardhanaha Prayopavishto gangayam
Prayopavishto gangayam
Prayopavishto gangayam
Vidya
dirat shriyam Sasamatkasya vaheto Manavardhanaha Prayopavishto gangayam Vidya dirat shriyam Sitting and fasting. Gayam on the bank of the Ganges. Anadritya neglecting. Adirat acquired kingdom. Shriyam opulence. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything? to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death. Responsibly, he was a great emperor.
And
possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Report by Srila Prabhupada. Maharishi Pariki was the emperor of the world and all the vast seas and oceans, and he did not have to take the trouble to acquire such a kingdom by his own effort. He inherited from his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and brothers. Besides that, he was doing well in the administration and was worthy of the good names of his forefathers. Consequently, there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. Then why should he give up all these favorable circumstances and sit down on the bank of the Ganges, fasting until death? This is astonishing, and therefore all were eager to know the cause. Translation again by Srila Prabhupada. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Ukam karoti vachalam pangum langaya tegirim yat kripa tarham bande shri gadir dinatarane. Since the 28th Sunday was Jayananda's disappearance day, and not much was said about it, if anything, I'm going to speak about him a little bit this morning. First, I want to read from a letter that Prabhupada wrote on 11th of May, 1977. Jayananda passed away on the 1st of May on the Western calendar, 1977. So, and this was shortly after, this letter was written on the 11th of May, 1977, from New Delhi. I'm just going to quote part of it. It says, if possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung on the Rath of Lord Jagannath. And in another letter, dated the 5th of May, 1977, 5 days after, or 4 days after Jayananda left, he wrote, and I'm just going to read part of it. As you were hearing Krishna Katha, he's writing his letters addressed to Jayananda, even though Jayananda had departed from this world. But as you were hearing Krishna Kirtan, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna Loka. This is Prabhupada's words in this letter. So what I'm going to talk about this morning mainly is the first Rath Yatra Festival of Los Angeles, which was inaugurated in a sense. Of course, all of the Rath Yatras were inaugurated by Srila Prabhupada, but Jayananda was known as the king of Rath Yatra because as one of Prabhupada's disciples and followers, he was the driving force of a lot of the Rath Yatras. The first Rath Yatra was held in San Francisco, and this one was in Los Angeles in 1977. Actually, Jayananda had a room in the New York Los Angeles community. And the devotees had organized a hospital bed, one of those self-rising beds for him in his room because he had a terminal disease. He had, at that time, leukemia, a very advanced form of cancer. He'd been to New York, he'd been to Tijuana, and there was no cure for his disease. He was very weak. But anyway, he told the devotees that there should be a Rath Yatra Festival in Los Angeles, such a big city, bigger than San Francisco. It's one of the biggest cities in the United States. So he had this idea, and it came to pass that I cruised around in an automobile with Jayananda, and Rameshwar, who was then the GBC, and Karanda, who was then the temple president of Los Angeles. And we were looking for a location in the Los Angeles area to have a Rath Yatra. But everywhere we went, it seemed abandoned. There were no people. We were in the downtown area of Los Angeles, the Central Business District, the Beverly Hills area, on Wilshire Boulevard, and it seemed like there were no people. They were either at home or in their cars. They were walking on the streets. There were virtually no people. So as a last resort, we thought, well, let's go to Venice Beach and just have a look. Because Los Angeles, I don't know if you know this, is located right on the seashore, or part of it is on the seashore.
And Venice Beach is part of Los Angeles. It's a suburb. It's not really a separate city. So we went to Venice Beach in the car, the four of us, and suddenly we saw there were a lot of people there walking up and down. There's a sort of cement, like a boardwalk or a promenade right near, right on the next to the where the sandy beach starts. And there were a lot of people, people on skateboards, people being pulled on skateboards by their dogs on a leash. And it was a strange menagerie of people. A lot of them were tourists from different parts of the country and different parts of the world. So we walked the whole distance of this promenade, and it was a cement promenade called Oceanfront Walk. And just at the end of it, Jayananda Prabhu was in a wheelchair, and I was pushing the wheelchair. And just as we reached the end of the promenade, there was a policeman standing there. His hands were on his hips. He was standing there. I think they call it akimbo. And just right in front of the wheelchair, as if he was blocking us. And I was thinking, oh, well, maybe he's going to give us a citation for bringing his wheelchair onto the promenade. We didn't know what was going to happen. It was pretty scary. He had kind of a stern look on his face. We thought it was stern. Anyway, he had a police uniform on. He was definitely a policeman. And the first thing he said was, I want to shake your hand. And he reached his hand out to Jayananda Prabhu. And Jayananda didn't know what to do. He just shook his hand. And he said, my name is Sergeant White. I'm from the Los Angeles Police Department. And one of your men saved one of my men's life. I don't know if you know what happened last night, but there was a gunfight in the central part of Los Angeles. And I want to thank you. And he shook everyone's hand. He shook my hand. He shook Rameshwar's hand. He shook Karandar's hand. And he was very grateful. And we thought, at least I did, but I don't know if all of us thought, but this is a symptom, a symbol of how we must have the Rath Yatra in this location. This, at the end of the day, we saw a lot of people there, but this was like the crowning glory to be endorsed by the city government, so to speak. So we never found out what actually happened. If this was even a devotee who was down there, who saved his life. Anyway, this man thought it was a devotee, and he wanted to thank us. So on the way back, we were asking Rameshwar, well, that sounds like we should have a Rath Yatra here. And he said, well, I'll have to think about it. He was like in charge at the time. He didn't really want to say yes right on the spot. But Jayananda was, well, when we got back to the temple, he had grown impatient because a week went by and still Rameshwar hadn't made a final decision. So Jayananda took it upon himself to order. He was an engineer by trade. I mean, he hadn't worked as an engineer, but he was a qualified engineer from Ohio. And he had calculated how much wood would be required in this construction to make three carts. And he actually ordered all this lumber. And one day, quite magically, it seemed to happen that a truck pulled up in this parking lot of the Los Angeles Temple and made three big piles of lumber and unloaded three big piles of lumber. And someone said to Rameshwar, well, there's all this lumber that strangely appeared. And what's going on? And it just kind of melted the guy's heart, Rameshwar's heart. And he thought, okay, he's so determined, we'll have the Rath Yatra, even though it was a very big expense. And we didn't have tents, we didn't know what to do. And the idea of the Rath Yatra was that there would be a big, I'm talking about this Rath Yatra from Jayananda's point of view, because he was the driving, it was his idea, of course it was Prabhupada's original idea, but it was his idea to have it in the Los Angeles city. And he was the one who got the wood, and he was really the driving force behind it, and he made everything happen. Of course, I was involved, and I'm going to tell the story about what actually happened there. So Rameshwar decided to have a marathon to raise enough money to have a Rath Yatra. And in those days, he figured that it would cost about $100,000, and that was really a lot of money, especially in those days. Now it's probably close to $1 million with inflation and everything. It involved getting big tents erected and a stage. And I mean, Los Angeles is a very opulent city, so things were done on a very grand scale beyond the imagination of people in other cities and other countries. course, the Calcutta Ratha Yatra and the Mumbai Ratha Yatra are sort of competitors. I don't know what's going on these days, but this was a very ambitious project to get tents all the way from India, Shamayanas from India, all the way from India, and to build three, not one, but three stages, and to have a whole bunch of group of exhibits, including a free feast, free food booths, and paid food booths, and bring the temple shop out to there, to that place. It was a 4-acre grass site at the end of this promenade. That was what most people thought of as Venice, California, or Venice Beach. It was actually part of LA, part of Los Angeles, sometimes known as LA. Often, I suppose. By the way, Los Angeles, Los Angeles in Spanish means the angels, which is kind of strange because it's a very polluted and unangelic place to live, I thought. And, you know, some people can't even live there because it's so hard to breathe that polluted air. Anyways, so the Ratha Yatra was on, and this was in April, and the Ratha Yatra, we decided to have it on the 15th of August. That year, 1977. 15th of August was the day decided upon because it was the day that India received independence from England in 1947. So that was agreed upon day, and we would have big entertainers like a famous Indian violinist and a famous jazz musician, Alice Coltrane. Her husband had died, and she was the wife of John Coltrane, who was a very, very famous tenor sax player. Anyway, she was into spiritual life somehow. So we wanted to have her, and it was a big event. So Jayananda was the driving force behind this whole thing. He stayed in his hospital bed. One day, this was when Jayananda was in the hospital, we decided to have a birthday party for him. But it was kind of difficult because we wanted to have it out where the Roth cars were being built, but he didn't want to go. He was very sick. And he had eaten a lot of prasadam, even though he was very ill. There was a devotee named Viharini. She was the wife of Maharaj Das, and she was an expert at making samosas out of potatoes and curd, I guess. And one day, Jayananda ate a whole tub full of these things. When he was very sick, he was only supposed to eat vegetables. This tub was half a meter long and about half a meter wide, something like that, and very deep, you know, like, I don't know, 15 centimeters deep. And he ate the whole thing. It was full of, and we were just amazed that he was, you know, supposed to eat only vegetables, but he ate this whole thing. Anyway, he didn't want to come out to this birthday party. And Viharini, who was his pet cook, had made three cakes. Three, not one, but three cakes. Each one looked like a Ratha Yatra car, decorated with the same colors, red, green, and I think blue, and had donuts for wheels, donuts. But he didn't want to go to it. And so we had to play a little trick. We had to tell a little white lie, play a little ruse, and we convinced the main builder, his name was Leetanath, You have to tell Jayananda that there's an engineering problem, and he has to see what's going on with the wheels in order to solve this problem. No one else can do it but him. And so very grudgingly and reluctantly, Jayananda agreed to go out there to the parking lot, which was quite a distance. It was about 200 meters away from where he was staying. It's a very large community. So when he got out there, he heard people chanting Hare Krishna. When he emerged from the apartment or flat building, and then he heard a few people singing Happy Birthday, and then he realized that it was his birthday party. So, and he went out there, and he was in a wheelchair, and I pushed him all the way out there in the wheelchair. When he got there, he was offered these big pieces of cake, of Ratha Yatra birthday cake, and he refused to take them because he wanted to speak, and we thought, oh, this is, you know, he can't talk because he was so weak that his voice was very wheezy. But he insisted on it. So he stood up and we thought, oh, this guy's gonna collapse. And so there were people standing on both sides of him because he could barely stand. Because that's why we had the wheelchair. And he spoke about the Ratha Yatra, about how it's such a glorious festival and everyone should take part in it, and on for about 15 minutes. So finally he sat down, and his voice was so weak, you could hear between sentences that there was a kind of a wheezing sound in his chest. But he insisted on speaking, and then after he sat down, he was offered some Vatvayantra cake, and he refused to take any. He just took a few pieces and gave the rest to the, there were children, there were about 30 or 40 devotees out there. It was a very warm city and sunny day. And the kids all took this and ate it because they really loved it. I mean, some of them were only 3 or 4 years old. They didn't really have too much of an idea of who Jayananda was or what was going on. And then after finally he ate a few crumbs of the cake and then distributed it to everyone else. So that was a very wonderful day. And then every day, another devotee named Prabhu Gahan worked with me, and we were kind of in tandem working on this big festival. We had like 4 months to go, April, May, June, July, August, 5 months. It was going to be on the 15th of August. So we literally approached 30 different departments in the Los Angeles city, the Park and Recreation Commission, the Fire Department, the Traffic Department, many different departments. It had to be the publicity department and all that. Had to be approached and give us their approval to do it. And it was done so quickly that they didn't realize what they were doing. It's kind of interesting. We made our own banners, made about 30 banners. By the way, I'm saying all this is, it's just part of my memory. It's not 100% accurate, maybe. It's just what I remember, but I'm trying to remember as much as possible. So we went to all these departments, got permission to even have banners, which we later found were the banners that size were illegal. The second year, the city made us put smaller banners up in a different way. Each banner was made out of yellow, kind of a false silk. I don't know what the material is called, but it was like it had a kind of sheen, like a silk sheen to it. And in red, embroidered letters on it where it said Festival of the Chariots, and then in smaller letters, Free Feast for 10,000. So they were strung up all over the city in between lampposts. We went out at night in a machine. They call them cherry pickers, those things that you have buckets at the end of the crane, and they're controlled by the person sitting in the crane, and we didn't even know how to work with the thing, the driver. But somehow we did it. And we put up all these things over about a 3 or 4 day period, and right before the festival took place, so they wouldn't take them down. And one of them was longer than usual. They were about 10 meters in length and about a meter high, a meter or almost 2 meters high. And one of them was strung up across Wilshire. Yeah, Wilshire. It's a very wide street at the intersection of Wilshire Boulevard and Westwood. And it's a very wide street. It's so wide that the banner had to be, for that particular place, had to be longer than 10 meters. It had to be very long. And it was so long that it sagged down in the middle, but it was over the traffic. What we didn't know was that it sagged so low at one point that a truck driving down the street caught the banner and started it. And the guy who was driving didn't even know it, what had happened. But it was kind of scary because the street lamps that were made of metal were bent, and if they had broken, they could have killed somebody. They were very sturdy pieces of iron, you know, maybe 20 meters high, or not 10 meters high off the ground. Anyway, this guy was in a parking lot right on that intersection, told us this story. He watched the whole thing. He was like the eyewitness. And what happened? Finally, was the ropes actually broke instead of the metal stanchions. So that was good. And then this guy that was in the little booth in the parking lot, he was the guy who was taking money for all the cars that were going to park there, went out and got the banner and folded it up and brought it back to his booth. And somehow or other, no one phoned the police or told him what had happened. And he kept this banner, and he showed us this banner, and he gave it to us as proof that he actually saw the thing happen. So that's the kind of stuff that went on. And we went to all these departments, and every night the two people who were organizing this festival, namely Prabhu Gahan and myself, we would go to Jayananda and report to him what had happened. And he used to say, gosh, I don't see how you guys are doing it. How do you do it?
And we thought, well, we're doing the whole thing. We're very proud of ourselves. Because Dayananda was very humble, but he was the actual person behind the whole thing. It was his idea. And he bought the lumber that made the chariots. And these chariots were made just like the ones that you see in Puri, in India, very tall and very sturdy. Lidanath, who is the builder, actually made the wheels. He welded them together. He got the iron spokes and some kind of a central place. And then he drove to Arizona, which is another state. It's not too far away from California, but he drove to have the rubber put on the things on these metal bands that were the outsides of the wheels. He had them what they call vulcanized. They were heated in such a way that they were stuck on to the rims, and they would never come off. They were really solid pieces of rubber. They were unbreakable, much stronger than automobile tires, and they didn't have any air in them. So they were very thick, about an inch or 2 inches thick, maybe 5 centimeters thick, and those were the wheels. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit and say that Prabhupada was still living but he wasn't at this Ratha-yatra festival, but he saw photographs of it. Color photographs were taken, and his comment was, "We have never seen such carts." And then he was at Bhaktivedanta Manor when he was shown these pictures, and he asked everyone who was then taking darshan to leave the room so he could meditate on this event. So another thing that happened was that somehow or other, I won't go into the details, but first of all, the marathon was quite successful, and all the booths were arranged, many booths. There were about 30 different booths, sort of like the Brisbane or Ratha-yatra or the Polish Woodstock. But it was big. It was about 4 acres of grassy area, and it was filled with booths. And it was a very ambitious project, actually. No one really thought it would be possible to do what we did, and we didn't even think it was going to be possible. But somehow or other, by reporting to Jayananda and getting his encouragement at every step of the way, we did it. And we actually even made a grid, which had on one axis had the name of every devotee, and on the other axis had every day, including the date of the week. So everyone in the community, about 40 or 50 devotees in the Los Angeles community, everyone was involved, and they had to do something. And we made our own banners. We even rented an industrial sewing machine so that the banners could be made. And they were, you know, everyone was fully engaged. And then the prasadam was a free feast for 10,000 was quite an ambitious project. So we hired a truck, a refrigerator truck, to keep the potato salad cold during the 3 or 4 days that we had to wait before the festival took place. And the tents that were coming from, and the shamayans that were coming from India arrived on a weekend day when the customs people were closed, and we went to the customs people. Well, there was a few people there, and they said, "I'm sorry, we can't do it before Sunday," which is the day of the Ratha-yatra, the following day. And somehow or other, we convinced them to just do it because we had a festival, and somehow they did it. And we got these tents and shamayans out to Venice Beach before the festival, and it took almost like 9 or 10 hours to erect everything, the stages and all the self-standing booths and all that sort of thing. And then the day of the festival, I'm going to back up, the day before the festival, I had been with a few devotees. We'd been up all night. It was in the day before mobile telephones existed, so we had hired walkie-talkies. You know, they're sort of like, you know, between the Venice Beach and the temple, the distance is about 5 miles or about like 7 kilometers away. So the only way we could communicate was to have walkie-talkies. And we used a telephone. And I remember that it was so intense that I was in the bathroom shaving and had the walkie-talkie and the telephone going at the same time while I was shaving. I mean, we were up all night, but to appear at the Ratha-yatra festival unshaved would be kind of unheard of. You had to make a good appearance. So we were trying to do everything. And, of course, we didn't do everything. We didn't have a picture of Jayananda that year on the cart. And it was a little bit overcast and drizzly the morning of the Ratha-yatra. It involved two cities, two cities. One was Santa Monica and one was Los Angeles. And this boardwalk, or the
the cement promenade goes into both cities. It starts in Santa Monica and ends in Venice Beach. So we had to have police departments and fire commissions from both cities. So we not only did all the Los Angeles departments, but a lot of Santa Monica departments too, including the, and at one point we had a meeting with the Park and Recreation Commission people and policemen from both cities and about 20 other people around the table, and they finally gave their consent that it was going to happen. And ordinarily, Venice Beach is a very degraded place. There's a lot of murders and drug traffic there at night. And before the festival, I went around to several houses in the area, and people were to get donations. It was just kind of symbolic. The main money came from the marathon, thousands of dollars. But it was kind of symbolic to visit all the homes. And one of the people whose home I visited was the sister of Divi Shakti, who lives in Vrindavan. And she was very enthusiastic, and she had a very large apartment, a two-story apartment, and gave a large donation. And when we were walking the streets, people would come up to us and say, your festival is the only time that there's no crime in this area. And the police that patrolled the area, they policed it in bicycles in those days. It was in the days before Segways and horsemen and all that. So they were very appreciative that we were doing something that was going to stop the crime that they were trying to prevent. At any rate, one of the things that really sort of capped the event was that we were somehow able to get national news coverage. And at that time, there were about 20 million people who watched the CBS News at night. And it was a Sunday night, and they had the news on at night. So at the end of the festival, we came into one of the devotees' quarters. It was Rameshwar's. He had a kind of well-appointed place with a big conference table on it. And we decided, okay, well, we're going to watch this news and see what they had. And it so happened that the interviewer was named Lovejoy, Karen Lovejoy. Remember her name? Lovejoy was her name. It's a common name in the United States, but that was her name, Karen Lovejoy. And she interviewed me, and that was shown on television. And she had been eating samosas all the time. She said, this is the most wonderful day of my life, she said. So there was a sound man and a cameraman, and of the thousands of people that she could have interviewed, she came across Jayananda's Prabhu's mother and father, who had flown all the way from Grand Junction, Colorado, which is about 1,500 kilometers away. And she said, who are you? She asked the usual questions, who are you and where do you live? And when they said Grand Junction, she said, well, what brings you out here? And she said, well, our son built these carts, but he died about 3 months ago. And so this was too good of a story to not be the soundbite of the news. And none of us were aware that even she had interviewed Jayananda, but we saw this on television. We were about 20 people watching the CBS Evening News. It was, the news is usually plane crashes, football games, and disasters, and politicians. But this, and we waited to the very end of the half-hour newscast, and it was all about Ratha Yatra. It was the only positive thing that was broadcast on that night. And the guy who was broadcasting it, I remember his name was Edward Bradley. Ed Bradley was a black American. And there was a picture of the Jagannath Puri temple behind him, very large. I don't know where they got it. But anyway, they had this entire broadcast. And that made us all feel that all the hard work that we undergone was worthwhile, because 20 million people in the United States were seeing this Ratha Yatra because of Jayananda. So that's all I have to say, and it's getting to be time to stop. So if there are any comments or questions, yes,
Amrish? Yeah, the other day when they had Ratha Yatra in Brisbane, mm-hmm. I saw the other day when they had Ratha Yatra in Brisbane, 6 o'clock at night, the Ratha Yatra was on the news. Recently, also.
Was what? On the
Ratha Yatra was on the news.
On the news?
On the most recent Ratha Yatra that we had in Brisbane. I saw the Ratha Yatra on the news.
One interesting thing that happened, I don't have time to tell the whole story, but one of Jayananda's high school mates, the guy that convenes all the every 10-year sort of meetings of the school,
saw this picture. He was in Durban, South Africa. He saw this picture and he thought of Jayananda on a chariot. He thought he recognized this person, but he wasn't sure who it was. And he, because of the, you know, the time had gone by and Jayananda was wearing his, and he had a shaved head and he was wearing devotional clothes in the picture. So he asked a lot of people, who's that picture of? And no one knew his name. They just saw it was Jayananda. That didn't mean anything to this guy because he knew him only as Jim. And then finally, he encountered someone who knew that his passport name. And then he wrote a letter to all of the people in his high school. They have every 10 years a kind of a memorial, a commemoration of what happened. And he said, and he told the story. And when he was in, that he went to this, somehow or other, he saw the Ratha Yatra in Johannesburg, even though he's from someplace in Ohio, like Oakwood, Ohio, or something like that. But that was the name of the school, Oakwood High School. And then he wrote about a page and a half to the schoolmates, the former schoolmates of Jayananda, that he's a very famous person in the Hare Krishna movement. It was a very nice letter, anyway. I was going to read that letter, but we don't have time. So, any other comments or questions? Yes.
Do they still have that
Ratha Yatra? In Los Angeles, they still have it. And what happened was, there some developers made a plan to concrete over that grass area, and the residents around there protested. And they had a big petition out, and they asked us to sign it. We signed it. But eventually, like 20 years later, whatever it was, they concreted over that area. But they still have the festival. They have in that same area. And I kind of followed it down that same route and ending in the same place. It's still it's probably the biggest Ratha Yatra still, and one of the biggest, if not the biggest, not in terms of people who have participated or in prasadam served, but in the numbers, the richness of the event of the cultural exposition. Yes.
To when Prabhupada got the photos and then he was asked to leave alone. Could you make some comment about that? Was that meditative?
I wasn't there, so I don't know. I just heard from Krishnamurti, who was the person who showed Prabhupada the photographs, that he said that Prabhupada asked everyone to leave the room so that he could meditate on the glory of that festival. And he'd just seen the pictures. He hadn't been there, but he knew that it was extraordinary somehow. His transcendental knowledge and understanding. Yes?
Did you say that Jayananda Prabhu actually left his body there before the festival to participate in it or see it? Jayananda Prabhu left his body before the festival, 3 months before?
Yes, he one of the things he said was that he said, my fondest wish is that I will die before Prabhupada. And he left his body in, I think on May the 1st. And the festival was on August the 15th. So he got his wish. And we used to feed him even stuff like Jell-O that had gelatin in it, because he said, please, I have to have some Jell-O before I die. It's a dying man's wish, so we gave it to him. The substance, yes.
I just wondered if somebody said Prabhupada or Krishna is mythology or Krishna is a figment of the imagination, and then wondered how Prabhupada would respond to that. If somebody said that to him, do you know any scenarios where that happened?
Well, this isn't exactly related to Jayananda, but I think that it just depended on the time and place and the circumstance. Sometimes Prabhupada would argue and chastise the person for saying that. Sometimes he would reason. It would just depend on where it was and who it was saying it. But it wasn't always the same thing. But he tried to show that there was actually a God, and that his name is Krishna. At least we believe that, and whether you do or not is your problem. Yes.
I'd like to try and understand why he got satisfied with the jilly when, at the time of death. Why was it important to a satisfied dying man?
Well, we just kind of did everything he asked to do. We didn't really realize it at the time that it was... I mean, some of us did, but we did it anyway. But I'm not recommending that people eat gelatin or anything like that. But it could happen. I think once Prabhupada accidentally drank some champagne on a flight. And when they told him that it was alcohol, he said, well, what can we do or something like that. Thought it was 7-Up. Yes.
How old is the when he left?
I'm just speculating. He was about 35 years old.
Yeah.
I'm just speculating that he might have been older, or you know, I don't know the exact date. I think we're going to have to end because looking at the last question.
I was just wondering how involved was Janakapuru in the construction of the chariots? How involved was Janakapuru in the construction of the chariots? And I also wanted to ask you if you had any instructions around Rathyatra in general, about the importance and how much effort should go into the festival.
Well, as far as Prabhupada, as far as Jayananda's engineering, the carts, he actually designed and engineered the work, although he wasn't involved in construction. And Prabhupada had an affection for Rathyatra festivals, even at a young age when he constructed that small cart, and his family appreciated that he was kind of the mark of a sage, that he was at a young age, maybe only 5 or 6 years old, that he had a little Rathyatra cart procession. But from an early age, it was one of his ambitions. And then when he came to the West, he made a drawing of the, you know, how it should happen, and it's evolved to what it is today. The chariots are made to look like the ones in Puri. So that was all started by Prabhupada, who obviously it was a great thing. He saw his dream, one of his most cherished dreams, come true. So I think we'll have to end, and otherwise breakfast is going to get cold for everybody. Hare Krishna, thank you. Jai Nanaki Jai.